Welcome to EncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. EncLive On Air is a podcast from EncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, EncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Afsaneh Barzi, MD, PhD, and Associate Professor in the Department of Medical Oncology and Therapeutics Research at City of Hope to discuss interesting findings from the 2022 ASCO Gastrointestinal Cancer Symposium, focusing on studies of clinical importance for patients with colorectal cancer. Dr. Barzi explained that the field of CRC does not produce new agents as frequently as other cancers, but oncologists do a good job of optimizing existing agents, so it is important to stay abreast of the latest developments. During our exclusive interview, Dr. Barzi discussed data from the ACCENT and RESPECT trials evaluating the value of oxaliplatin for patients with CRC, results from an investigation of nivolumab plus ipilimumab for patients with high tumor mutational burden, and more.
Hello, everybody. This is Afsaneh Barzi. I'm a GI medical oncology at City of Hope in the vicinity of Los Angeles in the state of California. It's an honor and pleasure to discuss my perspective and the abstract that I found useful in practice of GI oncology from ASCO GI 2022. I know there has been a lot of discussion about the durvalumab and role of durvalumab in cholangiocarcinoma and also combination of durva and trimi for HCC, but I think I wanted to take the time and discuss the topics that I found relevant and useful to day-to-day practice of oncology for patients with colorectal cancer. It's important to point out that the development of new drugs and actually making new drugs to the colorectal cancer space has been behind many other fields. So while we don't see new drugs enter the space as much as we see in many other cancer types, we do see a lot of optimization of the agents we have, whether it's in terms of duration of treatment or combination therapies that we're using. And therefore, it's important to take note of these new development or findings and presentation to optimize the care that we deliver to each and every one of our patients. With this introduction, the first abstract I want to discuss is the ACCENT presentation, which looked at the prognostic impact of discontinuation of treatment or discontinuation of oxaliplatin in patients with a stage 3 colon cancer. This was an oral presentation and was presented by Claire Gaius. So to give you a little bit of background, the adjuvant chemotherapy for colon cancer, since oxaliplatin was established, has been identified to be a combination of fluoropyrimidine plus oxaliplatin. Mosaic trial established that 6 months of adjuvant oxaliplatin-containing regimen is the standard of care. And more recently, IDEA collaboration looked at whether everybody needs 6 months of therapy or whether 3 months of therapy is adequate. What IDEA identified is that although in the entire population of stage 3 colon cancer, 3 months of therapy is not adequate, in subpopulation of patients, those with better risk disease, the 3 months of therapy is adequate. So the question remains, do we really need to discontinue treatment earlier than 6 months, meaning completely stopping the treatment? Or do we just need to remove the oxaliplatin, which is the major issue with the neuropathy and toxicities from the equation, to make the treatment safer or better? With that in mind, this trial was designed. They looked back at a large pool of existing trials, including some of what was part of the IDEA collaboration. And the investigator asked two questions. They asked whether early treatment discontinuation, meaning stopping the treatment, whether it's CAPOX or FOLFOX, at about 4 months is good enough, or it has an impact on disease-free survival and overall survival. And the second question they asked is, what if we stop just oxaliplatin at that time point, roughly about 4 months of therapy, and continue with the fluoropyrimidine 2-6 months? This is a very large retrospective study. About 10,000 patients entered this analysis. The finding of this study is actually quite interesting. They showed that early treatment discontinuation has negative impact on both disease-free survival and overall survival. In terms of DFS, was associated with a hazard ratio of 1.61 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.48 to 1.75. The p-value was significant. In terms of overall survival, early treatment discontinuation was associated with a hazard ratio of 1.73 with a confidence interval of 1.57 to 1.91. In summary, early treatment discontinuation is not a good thing. Now, the second question that this investigator asked had to do with the early discontinuation of oxaliplatin. So when they looked at early discontinuation of oxaliplatin, roughly around 4 months, and continuation with fluoropyrimidine, what they saw is that there is no impact on disease-free survival or overall survival. The hazard ratio for disease-free survival for early discontinuation of oxaliplatin was 1.07 with a confidence interval of 0.95 to 1.2, and p-value was 0.3, insignificant. And a similar hazard ratio for overall survival with an insignificant p-value. In conclusion, what we can see from this presentation is that discontinuation of oxaliplatin, roughly around 4 months, 3 to 4 months, is very reasonable and is not associated with a negative outcome, whether we look at disease-free survival or overall survival. However, it is best to continue with the fluoropyrimidine to 6 months and not discontinue it early at 3 months, which was the outcome of the IDEA trial. This analysis is practice-changing. This is a very large study. It confirms that we can remove oxaliplatin early on and also introduces the idea that we should continue with fluoropyrimidine, whether it's 5-FU or capecitabine, 2-6 months for best outcome in this patient population. The other thing that I kind of found interesting in the arena of adjuvant therapy for colorectal cancer was a retrospective analysis that was done by the team at the Memorial University of Newfoundland in Canada. This was presented as a poster, and the investigator looked at the chemotherapy-induced neutropenia in the adjuvant setting when FOLFOX is the regimen of choice. They looked back in their data set between 2013 and 2015, and they identified a total of 302 patients who received FOLFOX. What they reported is that chemotherapy-induced neutropenia was reported in 58% of the patients, so it's pretty significant. Interestingly, those who experienced chemotherapy-induced neutropenia had a trend towards better outcome, which was measured as overall survival. However, they also looked to see if administration of growth factor, GCSF, would be of any benefit in these patients who are receiving adjuvant FOLFOX. And they could not show that there is any benefit in receipt of growth factor in this patient population. So as a conclusion, granted that this is a retrospective study, this is fairly a small study, but I think it is interesting that we see a trend toward improvement in the outcome in the patients who experience chemotherapy-induced neutropenia. Presumably, these are patients who have the biology of more sensitivity to these treatments. It's also interesting that they could not show any benefit by addition of growth factor or GCSF to this patient population. Take-home message, if you see neutropenia in the adjuvant setting, dose modify the chemotherapy, there is no reason to use GCSF. Next, a study that I would like to present is a study that was presented by the Japanese group, again in the oral section. It was called RESPECT trial. It was a phase 3 trial to look at the role of combination therapy, including oxaliplatin, in elderly patients. So they looked at FOLFOX7 with bevacizumab or CAPOX with bevacizumab versus 5-FU-leucovorin or capecitabine with bevacizumab. This was a study that had to be made a little bit smaller because of the slow accrual. But nonetheless, it's a very good study and much needed. Looking back at the context that elderly patients are not really well represented in randomized clinical trial, and a lot of what we do in for elderly patients is extrapolation from what we know in younger population. It is really important to look at elderly population, which is a significant proportion of the patients we care for. So the study eligibility criteria was either for patients more than 75 years old with ECOG performance status of 0 to 2, or those 70 to 74 with ECOG performance status of 2. So these are older and perhaps more impaired from performance status patient population. They randomized the patient to the oxaliplatin-containing arm versus pirimidine with bevacizumab. They had about 125 patients in each arm, and the two arms were very balanced in terms of the study population, looking at the age, gender, performance status, and organ function. What they showed is that addition of oxaliplatin was not of any benefit for improvement in the progression-free survival. So in the no oxaliplatin group, the median progression-free survival was 9.4 months, and the 95% confidence interval was 8.3 to 10.3. In the oxaliplatin group, the median progression-free survival was 10 months with a 95% confidence interval of 9 to 11.2. The difference between these two values was not significant. P-value was 0.09. So there wasn't much difference in the median PFS between these two groups. And when you look at the no oxaliplatin group, actually the median PFS of 9.4 months is about what we expect in the first line setting. This was the primary endpoint of the study. They further looked at the overall survival, and they showed that the overall survival in the no oxaliplatin group was 21.3 months, and in the oxaliplatin group was 19.7 months. And the hazard ratio was crossing the boundary of one. So again, overall survival was not different between the two groups. However, when they looked at the response rate in the oxaliplatin group was significantly higher than non-oxaliplatin-containing group. The response rate in the oxaliplatin group was 48%, and in the fluoropyrimidine group was 30%. With this summary, I think this opens the door to consider chemotherapies without oxaliplatin in elderly patients. Remember that the major side effect of oxaliplatin is neuropathy, which is of significant in the elderly patient where it can impair their mobility. That said, is the difference in response rate, I think, can be used as a mechanism for which elderly patients we should consider for giving them oxaliplatin, or in other words, in which elderly patients are suitable or appropriate for treatment escalation to contain oxaliplatin. And my simple answer is those are patients who really need response, meaning their disease is causing symptoms such as pain, or their disease is threatening an organ in a short interval, and therefore we need the response to maintain them on some therapy. The takeaway message from this presentation is for majority of elderly patients, especially those older than age of 75, we do not need to use oxaliplatin-containing regimen. Fluoropyrimidine plus bevacizumab is adequate in this patient population. However, those who have organ-threatening metastatic disease or require a quick response, we can maybe consider oxaliplatin for them. Last but not least, I want to discuss an abstract, a game that was presented in a poster form that looked at nivolumab plus ipilimumab in patients with colorectal cancer with high tumor mutational burden. To give it the context, high tumor mutational burden is a universal FDA approval for pembrolizumab based on the analysis that they did from multiple trials. But when you look at the patient population, the study was published in Lancet Oncology, but when you look at the patient population for that high tumor mutational burden and approval of pembrolizumab, there wasn't any patient with colorectal cancer in that cohort. So the question remains whether patients with colorectal cancer who have high tumor mutational burden can actually benefit from immunotherapy. So the investigators of this study looked at combination of ipi plus nivo in high tumor mutational burden colorectal cancer patients. A total of 12 patients between 2018 and 2020 were enrolled on this study. The TMB ranged between 9 to 233 mutation per megabase with a median of 13. One patient was not evaluable for response, but out of the 11 patients who were evaluable for response, only one patient responded to treatment. Others did not respond to treatment. So with that context in mind, it seems that patients with high tumor mutational burden don't necessarily achieve the benefit we see in other tumor types from immunotherapy. This is in the colorectal cancer population, and therefore we maybe have to be thinking different about this patient population when we see high tumor mutational burden. It's also important to point out that the duration that the study took to enroll between February 2018 to May 2020 and the median of the mutations per megabase, which was 13, suggests that tumor mutational burden in colorectal cancer population is very much on the lower side. That's the summary of the abstracts that I found of interest and relevance to the practice of GI oncology, specifically colorectal cancer, and it was a delight to share them with you.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.